Bereishis chapter 11. So I want to clarify one thing we started to talk about yesterday. We discussed how all these stories, basically the first 12 chapters, or the first 11 chapters rather, of Sefer Bereishis, are the stories of the beginnings, right? After that, from chapter 12, starts the story of Zdovah, starts the story of Avraham Avinu, which are stories of a specific family or maybe a specific nation. But the previous stories are stories about mankind, about nature, about culture, about civilization. And this is sort of the last chapter of that kind. Now, we discussed that there's different levels of the story, and I will define it like this. We have the first story of Bereishis, which is about nature, the order of nature. The second chapter of Bereishis, which is about the order of culture, or the most basic, or in some sense, universal senses of human culture, at least the story seems to assume that all the kind of dynamics that are described there between man and woman, between man and animal, are universals, as they're cultures of humans, but as humans, not as specific people, and so on. And now, we're getting, after the Mabel, we're getting to stories, and the Mabel also seems to be important for establishing the relationship between man and animals in a new way, and so on. But now we have this story which is more, not about nature, and not about culture, but about something we could call civilization. Now, civilization has this thing that it's not entirely, you can't be called a human universal. When we say the difference in culture and civilization, in the sense is culture, we're talking about the way humans behave most of the time or most of the places as humans. When we say civilization, we're talking about the way in which cities are organized, the way in which states or countries or kingdoms are organized. And these are things which, by their nature, by what they are what also makes differences between different nations and different people, between different localities, different kingdoms. And for that, we started the story yesterday about the list of the 70 children or grandchildren of Noach, who are the fathers of the 70 nations, which is already saying there is not only one kind of person. There's humankind, but there's different civilizations, different cities. We discussed the first empire, the first king, Nimrod, who was... Again, this is something that not every civilization, not every people has to have a king. Not every group of cities have to be controlled by one king and so on. So these are things in which is civilization. Now we have an explicit story and, of course, the question of language. So, of course, the fact that there is human language, that humans speak, is something explicit in some sense in the first story already, or especially in the second story, because we have this. Doesn't really literally say that man can speak. Of course, in the story also the snake speaks. But what we do have is man giving names. And that seems maybe a important signifier of man's language. Because language is basically the fact that we can give names. In other words, symbolic words, symbolic items, which symbolize reality. And then we use that in order to communicate. That's in some way naming things is the first basis of language. And that's something important for humankind. But later, what we have is different languages, so that's different. There isn't like the fact that humans speak. There is the actual humans that exist each have their own language, their own city, their own society, their own civilization, or maybe more than one civilization at least. And that's what this story here, known as the story of the Dor HaFlugah, or the story of the Tower of Babel, is meant to explain, meant to illustrate. And the structure of the story, and we have to give an important thing, the structure of the story is very similar to the structure of the story of Gan Eden of the Etz HaChaim in chapter 2 and 3, which is that man, there is the primordial state, like the state before the split. It's just like there's the state before man was even created or man was thrown out of the garden and so on. There's the prior state. There is something that man does, something that man tries, starts doing. And then there is God who is stopping man from accomplishing all of what he wants, stopping man from creating, from actualizing all his designs. And by that, establishing something basic about humans. So previously it was about eternal life. Man might have wanted to eat from the tree of life and live forever, and God stopped him. He already started by eating from the Etz Hadas, but didn't finish by eating from the Etz HaChaim. And he was also exiled, banished. So there's like travel, there's like spreading out over the earth, out of the garden. And that story. And here we have something very analogous to it. And even a greater analogy is there's also the same three steps where there's the previous state, there's man's, they're having their designs and starting to do them. And then God coming down or talking, coming down to the people as we had God coming into the garden and talking with Adam. And then God doing his action. And there we had speech and here we're going to have actions of God. So the story is, the primordial state, the previous state is, all of the earth spoke one language. Of course, this is assuming there was only one family of Noach, and they must have been able to communicate with each other, or even before Adam, but now we're talking about Noach, so there is only one language. And then they travel. They traveled Mikedem. Again, this is something, a motif of the stories of Gan Eden. Everything starts from the east, or they're traveling from the east, maybe traveling from the east to west, but there seems to be like a thought that just like the sun starts from the east and travels to west, so the beginning of mankind was out of the east and seems to move west. Mikedem probably is from the east, but moving more west, and like the idea is Mesopotamia and the east, later Israel is to the west of Mesopotamia, and the origins of mankind are sort of in the east and traveling west. That's why now we talk about the west. There's like a symbolic thing in that, like the west is the end of the earth. Okay, now they travel and they found a place, a valley in the land of Shinar, which is later called Babel. And of course, this is another story for change of names. There's two names. There's Shinar and Babel are two names for the same place. And they live there. And now we have the story of them building the tower. And it's like there's a quote of the dialogue. They say to each other, let's create bricks and burn them and use these bricks instead of stones and have chemer or like some kind of cement, a clay used instead of regular clay. And this seems to be an important part of the story because this is like an advancement in human technology, human civilization. Of course, the reason is because in other places, later we'll see in the land of Israel or in mountainous regions, the most of building is like from natural bricks. But in this area in Babel, there aren't really many natural stones or rocks. So in order to build houses, people have to create bricks out of mud or out of clay and using fire to burn them and create them. And this is an important stage in like humans becoming disconnected from nature, becoming building civilizations above nature and a higher level of human control. And to some extent, that's good. And to another extent, there seems to be a bias against that in all these stories. Later, much later, we talk about, for example, the Mizbeach having to be built out of full rocks, avunim shlemus. In other words, not out of bricks, not even out of cut rocks, avunim guzis. And seeming to like show that we're interested in God's world, in the natural world, not only in when humans start to get too involved, things can get bad. Okay, and then they said that we're going to make ourselves a city and a tower whose head will be in heaven. Of course, this is an exaggeration, not literally in heaven, like a tall tower. Vanaslan Shem will make a name for ourselves. Penufet up nekolar. So it seems like the people already preempting what will actually happen to them. They were afraid that they will be spread out and they want to keep a unity. This is like talking about empires or talking about people trying to build cities in order to keep a certain unity and to have a certain control. And that's their plan. Our discussions of like different towers in the east, which are said to be these towers that we're talking about. But anyways, that's the man's plan. Now God goes down to see the city and the tower. So the city and like the tower is like what the center of the city, or maybe like a worship tower or a lookout tower that causes everything to surround that, to come around that. And Hashem says, look, they're only one nation with one language, and they've only started, and now they can be able to do whatever they want. Everything they've planned to do, they will be able to do. And that is very similar to God doesn't like people to be able to do whatever they want. There's limitation to how good it is for people to have power and to have knowledge and to be able to use their knowledge and like similar to God's. And therefore, Narda, God says, well, let's go down and we will confuse their language so they don't speak one another language. So this story has, it's very interesting, it's like the opposite of what we would think. We would think, or maybe we think, that the different languages happen after geographical spread outs. People spread out in different places, and then slowly the dialects shifted one from another, and so on. Here what we have is that it's the opposite. First, people didn't understand each other. God somehow caused them to not speak one the other's language, and that is what caused them to spread out, because apparently they couldn't talk to one another, so I guess they started living in different places and they stopped building this one city. And that then there's also an end, like a reason for why this place called Babel, because Sham Bolal Hashem. Babel is a language of mixing. That's where God mixed, confused the languages, and from there they spread out. So this is like also the story, like the original or the second original place of mankind living is in Babel. That's very interesting, by the way, for the rest of the Torah. You'll see later, I mean much later, the Jews are going to be exiled to Babel, right? Because Babel is the major exile, right? You get into Mitzrayim, but the major exile is to Babel. And there seems to be something where go back to where you came from. And possibly Avraham Avinu also seems to have come out of Babel and moved to the west. In any case, it's important, and maybe there's a, it might not literally mean to say it this way, maybe this is like the story putting language on the same level, at least, of the geographical dispersion. Maybe it's not really saying that's the cause of it, but in any case, it seems to be important that the story seems to see language as, in other words, language is the how humankind manipulate the world through symbols, which is the way of knowledge, which is the way of Das. And there's God limits to this, and the main limit to this is not the entire world speaking the same language, which disallows humans from, maybe we could say, ruining everything. This can be also said to be some kind of the solution to the problem of the Mabul. Remember, in the Mabul, the entire earth, all of humans were corrupted, and therefore there was no solution but to destroy the entire earth. Now that we have different nations, different civilizations, so even if one civilization will be corrupted, that not necessarily the entire world will be corrupted. And now, therefore, in a big sense, the logic of destruction of the world, which was about all of mankind in the previous story, now moves over to destruction of specific nations. So, of course, the entire Bible, if a nation sins, if a people, even a family, or maybe even one person sins, they can be destroyed, but not the entire world. So that seems to be an important tikkun, an important correction to the way the world works. And this is why we move from universal stories about mankind to specific stories of specific nations and even specific people. And that's a good thing, in order so that we, like, one person can have a good world, even if not the whole world. You don't, not everyone needs to wait for everyone else to be good. Okay, so that's the end of the story. Now we have the next important list, known as the Asara Doras, the 10 generations from Shem to Avram, from Noach to Avram. And again, this list is, as we've already noted in the previous list, the big difference in the previous list is that it doesn't split the people's lives from after. It doesn't give a total amount of years. In the previous list, we had three psukim, or three parts in each generation. There is how the age at which they gave birth, the amount of years they lived after giving birth, and the amount of total years, and then it says they died. Here, we're missing the last part. None of the people here seem to have died. And this seems to be important. Maybe the point is that, in some sense, it's not so basic. In the previous list, we're like establishing the fact that people create generations, and then like the world goes on to the next one, and then the previous one stops disappearing. So it's like there's three stages. There's the stage of the father without his child, there's the stage of both living together, and there's the stage of the child living without the father, which is after he dies. Here, maybe in some sense, there's something a little slight tikkun where the fathers continue in some way to live on, and maybe that's because they established these 70 nations who are all named after their fathers. In some way they live on. It doesn't say that any of these died. It's a very interesting fact. The only one later that dies is Terach in the end of the story. But all the nine generations here don't die, or at least doesn't say that they die. We have Shem, 100 years old, have Aspachshad, 2 years after the Mabul. This is actually interesting because, of course, Noach had his three children when he was 500 years old, and when he was 600 years old, there was the Mabul. Turns out that 2 years after the Mabul, Shem was still 100 years old. It could be that these numbers are just rounded down. And of course, probably all the three children of Noach weren't born in the same exact year. So if Shem was the younger one, as it seems to say earlier, if he was older, so it stands to reason that Shem was born when Noach was already 502. And therefore, it makes sense that he was 100 years old 2 years after the Mabul. Okay, so he lives as Arpachshad. Arpachshad has Shelach. Shelach has Ever. Of course, Ever seems to be an important name in the later in the story. That we have Avikol ben Ever. Ever has a son, Peleg. We already had his name earlier, also connected with Niflega Oretz. Peleg has a son, Reu. Reu has a son, Srug. Srug has a son, Nochar. Nochar has a son, Terach. And Terach has three sons. This is very similar to the previous story we had, where we had nine generations, and then the tenth having three sons, Noach having three sons. Terach also has three sons, Avram, Nochar, and Haran. And then, in the same exact way, there's Ve'ilat al this Terach, right? Previously we had a little more words between this and that, but the last generation is the one where we want to talk about. So these are also seems to be also a list that fills in the space between the two major stories, the story of Noach and the Mabul, and the story of Avram. And this whole 10 generations explicitly leads to Terach and Avram's family, Terach's family. So Terach had, and there we go, it repeats itself in order to start a new beginning. Ve'ele told us Terach has a new beginning, and it repeats itself and says Terach had Avram, Nochar, and Haran. Haran had Loit. Haran died when Terach was still alive in Ur Kasdim. Now Kasdim are many times another name for Bavel. Of course, really there's another like group or a tribe called Kasdim from Kesed, as it says later and earlier. But they seem to be related, at least, or at least possibly some of the Kasdim later became the kings in Babylonia. So that's why many times the Bavel is called Kasdim. So these are seems to be connected. Ur is a name for either a place, a valley, or of course the Medrash calls Ur a fire, and this is also Ur can mean a fire, but literally probably just means the valley of Kazdim, which would mean that it's the same thing as the Bika Beretz Shinar, right? The Bika, which is the valley in Shinar, which is Bavel, which is Kazdim. Avraham was born there. And in some sense, the story of Avraham and his family, Avram now, and Terach and his family, moving from there is part of the story of Misham Efitzam. So they were born there, and each, again, just like we said, this is where the story moves from a universal story to a particular story. But we can assume that it explicitly said, Misham Efitzam Hashem L'Pnei Kol Eretz, all the different families moved out of Shinar to different places. We just have the story of one family moving out, but of course, everyone moved to their place. Okay? Now, another interesting thing, which is the first time in the entire story, since Odomar at least, which we have, which is the story of people taking wives or getting married. And this is probably important because, of course, the big problem of the Mabel was that the situation of taking wives was ruined. And here it's not like that. We have the story of Avram and Ochar, right? Because Horon died. So now we're left with Avram and Ochar taking wives. Avram takes the wife Sarai, Ochar takes the wife Milcah, and they have names. These are also named women, the two first named women in the Tanakh after Chava. Another important thing, children's wives are not named. So this, whenever something is named, of course, it means that it's important. It means that it's related to as an individual, as a person, right? That's very different than like animals. We say they don't have names in the sense there's a group of animals, there's an animal kind, but there isn't specific animals, okay? And it talks about Milcah being the son of Horon. So apparently Avram, Nochar married his niece, Avi Milcah Avi Yiska. Apparently she had two sisters, Milcah and Yiska, which sometimes she has a sister Yiska. Of course the Medrash says that Yiska Sura, so she was her sister too, but literally just probably means to talk, there's something going on with this Yiska. Now an important story, of course this is one of the styles that Rashbam famously discovered, that this is one of the important stylistic things of the Tanakh, which is that it often gives us a word to preface, to give to us to be ready, a short word to be ready for the story later. And of course, there will be many stories later about will Sarah have children, Sarah being barren and not having children. And this is the first, this is just like a word where it says, Sarah was barren, had no child. And of course, this is setting the stage for a long drama just about that. Okay, so we had the birth of Terach's three children, we had the death of one of his children. Maybe also the first person said explicitly that he died when his father was still alive, because that might have happened. That happened also to Chanoich, probably, if you count up the years, but it doesn't say explicitly. And the story of the marriage of Avram and Ochar, and the story of a problem with Avram's marriage specifically, which is that Sarai had no child. And now we have the last story in this chapter, and also the story that connects us to the next chapter. But again, this is very clearly meant to be the end of this chapter, and also the parsha is split it up here correctly, the end of Nech and the beginning of Lech Lecha, and which is the migration of Terach's family from Kazdim to Canaan. Okay, so Terach takes his children, Avram, Loit, which is his grandchild, but replacing Horon. Again, we have the same logic where sometimes the sort of the genealogical list skip a generation. Here we see clearly why. Because his father died, so now Loit sort of replaces his father in the family place. Like he takes his place. And Sarai, the wife of Avram, what happened with Nochar? We don't know here. Apparently Nochar didn't come along. Later we find out that Lavan, the son of Nochar, is still living in Aram, so maybe that's connected with that. And there's some contradictions about this, we'll get to that. So they go to Canaan and they stay in Choran. Oh sorry. So here they stay in Choran. They don't actually get to Canaan, apparently. Later Avram will get to Canaan. And then Terach dies. This is the only person in the list of 10 generations that dies. Terach is 205 years old, and he dies in Choran. So they traveling to get to Canaan, but they didn't get to it, and they die in Choran. And this is the end of this chapter and of this whole story and of this whole part of the book Bereshis.